buildings with this level of continuous support. So this is not an extravagant proposal, and I would urge two things. I would urge you to consider it early, pass it early, and do everything you possibly can to get this to get the level of funding up beyond the recommendation you had in the last session.
We have a question, Representative Dempsey.
Yes. Is this we passed in the House of Representatives the bonding bill, Doctor? And I'm wondering if and it passed the House. And that is correct. And I was wondering, I can't recall, and I don't have that in front of me. I can't recall, were all of these requests, were they in that particular bill?
President Brunick.
Representative Norris, Representative Dempsey, to my recollection, there were two major differences between the House bill and our proposed bill, and there may be some additional information that Richard Pitsenreiter can fill in for me. First of all, your HEPA recommendation, as I recall, was not 90, but I think it was $38 million, and that's the investment pool for renewal facilities, life safety, and other needs. The second major change is, I think, the bill did not include the University of Minnesota Duluth Sports and Health Center, and I can't recall if it fully funded the Academic Health Center classrooms. It did not, I think. But I think there was a placement, there was a placeholder for the Academic Health Center classrooms. And in Morris, there was a football facility, a joint venture between the campus and the high school. And I think the House bill includes the biomass facility, which I think is an incredibly creative effort to really get our researchers and get our facility there working on alternative fuels and alternative forms of energy. But I don't think it included the football facility item. So it was, your recommendation was higher than the recommendation of the governor the last time, I think it was absent those areas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
President Boone, continue.
Representative Norris and members of the committee, let's return now to the biennial budget request. As I stated just a moment ago, I think the University of Minnesota is one of the finest public research and educational institutions or systems in the world, and I think it's a very, very powerful state statewide resource in Minnesota. We are proposing something we call a partnership proposal with the state of Minnesota, and we didn't choose this word partnership lightly. We think it really states the essence of the kind of connection the university has had with the state, and what I think it will take to keep the university strong and to fulfill our mission for the future. It's my job, along with a very talented members of our community and the Board of Regents, to make difficult decisions. And these are difficult decisions we need to make in these times to ensure the continued vitality of the University of Minnesota. But the essence of our proposal to you today is grounded very firmly in our belief that we cannot maintain the university with its current level of productivity without a strong, and I would add, enduring partnership with the state of Minnesota. And that's why I come here today, to really ask you to renew that partnership. A partnership proposal that you will see in a few moments requires that we do some heavy lifting and assume some responsibility for our future as well. Let me start with why I believe the University of Minnesota is such an incredibly good investment for our state. I believe the university is one of the state's greatest assets, and I think one of its best investments, one of the best investments the state can make in its own future. We make a very unique and distinctive contribution to Minnesota's economy, civic culture, and quality of life. Leading economists such as Richard Florida, our own Art Rolnick from the Regional Federal Reserve Bank, argue quite strongly that areas of the United States and areas of the world that have in the center of them strong research universities tend to have strong, vibrant, and thriving economies. You can't have a strong medical device industry, for example, without, in my judgment, the kind of work we do at the University of Minnesota. So we think an investment in the university is a key to the long-range economic vitality of our state and clearly our quality of life. I know my colleagues in the private private college sector, and in Minsk you can make similar arguments in perhaps different areas, but I do think that is an important concept that we need to appreciate. Secondly, we provide what I think are unique and in some ways unparalleled opportunities, educational opportunities, to more than 64,000 students every year who study mostly full-time and thousands of others who study just part-time. The Twin Cities campus this year was designated as the second largest campus in the United States. Last year we graduated a record of more than 12,000 graduates, and I believe they are a part of the state's incredibly well-educated workforce. 70% of the students who graduate from the University of Minnesota stay in Minnesota, contribute to Minnesota's economy, contribute to Minnesota's quality of life. Two-thirds of the state's advanced health care workers, practitioners, doctors, dentists, pharmacists, public health professionals, I would also argue veterinarians, are trained at the University of Minnesota. I often say to public groups when I'm out speaking, think of what the health care system in Minnesota would be like without your University of Minnesota. More than 4,000 companies have been formed or founded by Institute of Technology alumni. 4,000 companies. 2,600 of these companies reside in Minnesota. They produce an estimated annual revenue of nearly $50 billion annually, and they employ 175,000 Minnesotans at the present time. So the people who graduate from the university go out, and they really are leaders in Minnesota's economy. I should also mention that university faculty through research have been leaders in starting new companies. The university has been ranked in the top 10 in starting new companies through research for each of the last 3 years. I mentioned that Minnesota, the University of Minnesota, is the state's only research university. And what does that mean, and why should anyone care? Let me just give you my take on the answer. More than 98% of all competitive research dollars, these are competitively earned dollars, coming into higher education institutions in Minnesota come through the University of Minnesota, 98 cents every dollar. It's a big part of Minnesota's positive balance of payments, and I would argue the state cannot afford to lose this very important competitive edge. What does that mean in dollar terms? In the last 3 years, the average number of dollars coming into Minnesota, mostly from someplace else, the federal government being the largest contributor, that dollar amount was over $520 million a year. The U.S. Department of Commerce estimates for every $1 million we bring into the state to fund research and development through the University of Minnesota, creates about 40 jobs in Minnesota's private economy. That's 20,000 jobs outside the university, not inside the university, created by the research mission and these competitive grants that our faculty and staff receive.
President Bruni,
yes.
Can I interrupt for a moment? Yes. Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Chairman Norris. Dr. Bruni, perhaps you're getting to this anyway, but last week, a report was released that indicated that the University of Minnesota is declining as a research institute in national rankings, and I was wondering what you felt were the reasons for that.
Yes, we'll get into that in some detail, but let me address it very, very quickly.
President Bruni.
Representative Norris and Representative Erdahl. The University of Florida has produced an annual ranking of public research, public and private research over the past several years. And it's a particularly rigorous assessment because they base their evaluations on what I consider to be, and people in our field consider to be, measures of productivity. not sort of halo effect measures, but they're real measures of results and impact. And we have slipped slightly, particularly in two areas. The competitiveness of our students, while increasing, is not as strong, that is, in terms of test scores and their entering grades, as some other institutions around the country. And this past year, we slipped very slightly. We slipped out of the top 25 in private giving for the first time in many years, and slipped some in faculty awards, which is another measure. We tend to do well in all the others. There's good news and bad news here. The good news is the University of Minnesota is still in the top public research universities in the country, and these numbers will bounce around. You know, you can be 6th 1 year, 5th 3rd. We've been between 3rd and 7th. I think it's something we have to watch, because I do believe, and I will go on to make this argument, that when you substantially reduce the sort of core infrastructure, the base funding for a place like the University of Minnesota, you do risk losing your competitive edge. It's becoming increasingly competitive to go after $520 million a year. For example, the year we had the very big budget cut, we went from $530 million of outside sponsored funding down to $512. I can't attribute all of that to budget cuts. There may have been other factors as well. But when you stop hiring people, and our average faculty member brings in roughly about double his or her salary in outside funding, so when you stop hiring, you freeze hiring, or you reduce your faculty complement, that makes you less competitive, and that, in fact, did occur during this two-year period. I'm not one to say the sky is falling. I still think we're right in there with the best of them, and our aspiration is to get even better over the next several years. You fully fund this proposal, I can promise you. We'll get that.
We'll let you get back to your presentation, but Representative Carlson has a question.
Yeah, just as a follow-up to that, you said one of the areas that you dropped is the private giving. And not
just like what they do is they measure the extent to which in about 10 of these broad categories you are represented in the top 25. And we were 26th in that area. And in previous years, when we had a very ambitious capital fundraising campaign, we were actually much better. And so these numbers do jump around. And I think our economy was recovering a little bit more slowly. We had just finished a big campaign. And so when a big campaign is over, you know, usually the private fundraising slacks off a little bit. But it's coming back. And I don't expect that to be a long-term.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that was my very question that, not too long ago, you finished what I think was the university's...
Yeah, it was the second most successful campaign of a public university in the United States, and it won't stay in that second position for long because Michigan is out finishing a campaign right now.
It's really
a phenomenally successful campaign.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, my question then was, are those reflective of annual giving, or do they take a period of time that would be beyond
they take that year.
So, so clearly I would think, as you point out, then it might have been influenced to some degree by the previous successful campaign, and hopefully it'll bounce back with the next big campaign.
Yeah, but it bears watching, and I think these are three areas: private fundraising, awards and recognitions of faculty that I think are related to really maintaining a really strong university, getting back to the recruitment and retention of faculty that we need to address. And then I think we do, I'll be honest with you, I think we do have some work to do to improve our student profile, to improve the progress that our students make toward timely graduation, and improve our graduation rates. And our Board of Regents has been very, very strong and consistent in its advocacy to move the university more in that direction. And so I think we have the ideas in place and the strategies underway to address those issues. But there's little doubt that if you take it in the neck, as we did, we took the largest reduction, I think, of any research university of our kind. And I would say that was also true of Minsky and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. It was probably the largest single cut given to higher education in the past 2 years. And when that happens, it does have some impact. money does matter. Well, let me just mention a couple of other things. I just talked about the University of Florida study. We take great pride in our position, but you did see the article recently. The university is always in the top 10 or top 15 in starting new companies and research, filing patents. Just in the past 5 years, we filed 240 patents, and I think that's a good news story. The faculty have created 80 new crop varieties that our agricultural industry is using to create, very important yields and solving very important disease problems in what I think is one of the most important sectors of our economy, that is agriculture and food processing. So I started by saying the University of Minnesota, I think, is an incredibly good investment. It returns a great deal to the state. Economists talk about direct and indirect returns, and the estimate is that for every dollar you invest in us, directly and indirectly, we return 16 back to the state of Minnesota. This particular slide, the next one, it gives you at least a partial picture of the annual revenues to the University of Minnesota. And on the left-hand side of the diagram, you can see the state appropriation, which is approximately $570 million a year, a very substantial amount of investment. But you can see to the right-hand bar that when you take tuition, tuition revenues, grant and contract income, that the university more than doubles the state investment today. When you add gift income, miscellaneous income from our health practices and other forms of revenue, it's getting to the point where the university's budget produces about $4 for nearly $4 for every dollar invested in us. I think that's good news for the university. I think that's incredibly good news for the state of Minnesota. I think it benefits us all, and I think it's a very important profile to maintain if we want to keep this state in the center of national and international competition. I'd like to take just a couple of minutes to share a video clip. Dr. Frank Serra, the star of this show, is in the audience, and he's happy to answer questions. But the purpose of this very, very short clip is to give you a feel in one area of health research, give you a sense of what happens when you take basic ideas, the ideas of basic research, and people go to work on translating those ideas into cures and other areas of health treatment that really very deeply and profoundly affect the health of human beings. So let's roll this clip and see if it works.
We talk a lot about translational research in the academic health sector. What that means is that we take the discoveries that happen in the laboratory to the patients to improve the way that we take care of them. Now let me give you an example in diabetes. Mm-hmm. Basic scientists in the lab have studied the pancreas to find out what works well and what doesn't work well in people with diabetes. What they discovered was the function of a very important kind of cell called an islet cell. What that islet cell does is make insulin. With that discovery, our translational researchers went to work to learn how to collect and transplant those cells so that type 1 diabetes could process insulin without regular injections of insulin. We're now conducting clinical trials for type 1 diabetics, the results of which look very promising to date. The process to harvest and purify these islets has been licensed to a local company. It's called Islet Technologies. And that's how discoveries in a university lab can lead to a new Minnesota business. That's the full continuum of translational research. New discoveries in the laboratories, new treatments for patients, and new businesses for Minnesota. Healthy people, healthy economy. That's what you expect from us.
I think this gives you just one of many glimpses of how the research of the university finds its way into direct application and benefits Minnesota's economy directly. I should just mention that in the last legislative session, the House, the Senate, the Governor supported the translational research bill after a very important private contribution from the McGuire Foundation. And that building is under construction now and will house a lot of this kind of research going forward. So we're very, very excited about these new developments at the University of Minnesota. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the architecture, if you will, of the university's budget request. I emphasize the point that we call this a partnership proposal, one where we are asking the state to make some very critical investments in the future of the University of Minnesota, but we also in this proposal are proposing to handle a lot of our basic cost and investment needs as well. What we are asking the state to do is to invest in those areas that we think are unique to the roles and responsibilities, the mission, the roles, the responsibilities of the University of Minnesota, to invest in areas that we really believe build on the strengths of the University of Minnesota, what economists call the comparative advantages of the university, where we are better than we think other people, similar universities are around the country, but also to invest in areas that are critically important to Minnesota's future. These are also areas of strength in Minnesota's economy. They are also areas of comparative advantage to Minnesota's economy. So just to recap what's on the slide, we are asking for state investments in a cluster of things that we call biosciences for a healthy society. We're asking for some modest investment that we think will go to the heart of attracting and retaining talent for Minnesota's future. We'll go into each of these. And we're asking for some resources, badly needed resources, that we think are necessary to sustain and strengthen the essential research and technology infrastructure of the University of Minnesota. And I'll talk about why these areas are so critical to the state. It's very rare that someone like me will come and talk about infrastructure. You know, usually you have a lot more sizzle for the state. But I'm telling you, you can't be a great research university. You can't be a great educational institution today if you neglect your core infrastructure. I started with comments about the capital request. This is all about equipping laboratories, making sure that people have the equipment and technology support to really succeed in this highly competitive economy. The university is also proposing to do half of the lifting to meet its long-term budget needs, or at least the needs of the next 2 years. We're proposing to cover basic operating costs, you know, cost increases on fuels, utilities, cost increases related to buildings, debt, operating expenses, fundamental staff and faculty compensation increases, you know, the basic cost. While we have mostly a merit-driven system at the University of Minnesota, this would be approximately a 3% salary and wage increase, and then other critical academic investments that are not referenced in this particular proposal. Let's talk a little bit about biosciences for a healthy society, and this is just only a small part of what we plan to do over the next couple of years. Let me just make a couple of quick comments about each of these. I made a point just a moment ago that agriculture, food processing, was about 10% of Minnesota's gross domestic product. It is a big part of the state's economy and competitive advantage on the world scene. We have over 400 food processing companies in Minnesota alone. And this initiative, which involves people from multiple fields, is all about preventing diet-related diseases. You heard Frank talk just a moment ago about diabetes. To confront issues like obesity, high blood pressure, cancer, stroke, asthma, arthritis, all of the areas that really drive up healthcare costs but are preventable. If you have the right science and the right application. It's also about improving food crops and production, and very significantly investing very substantially in areas of food safety that I think are increasingly a concern, not just in this country, or in this state, but around the country as well. A second cluster of activities relates to translational research in human health. and that includes some of the ideas that Frank was talking about in the video clip. It also addresses, and I believe we have a unique advantage in this area, a whole range of neurodegenerative diseases and disorders such as ataxia, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, multiple sclerosis, just to name a few. It also includes research on what people call bioprobes, drugs, bio-microelectronics, you know, areas that we think are, in the long term, critically important to advancing the medical device and the biomedical device industry and pharmaceutical industries in Minnesota. A third area relates to new products through biotechnology. And I'm sure all of you read the article in the newspaper about ethanol and the efforts to increase ethanol production in the state of Minnesota. But there are many, many other products and many, many other ways to create alternative sources of energy that we think can reduce the use of carbon fuels, improve our environment, and I think make Minnesota a world leader. These are, it would take a long time to get into the heart of every one of these ideas, but we believe these are areas where the University of Minnesota, particularly on the Twin Cities campus, is exceptionally strong. We have very, very strong academic fields. We think, for example, the area of brain development and functioning across the lifespan is likely to be one of the leading areas of research for the next 75 to 100 years. And we're exceptionally well positioned in these areas, given the breadth and depth of academic programs at the University of Minnesota. But most importantly for us, these are also critically important areas of strength and opportunity in Minnesota's economy at the present time.
President Runick, we have a question from Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Brunix, one of the frustrations that I have as a university advocate is it's always, what have you done for me lately? And you know, they'll talk about, well, gee, you developed the taconite process, and a lot of people think that's all you've done. I would just like to say that my wife is a graduate of the University of Minnesota Medical School and rotated through a neurology residency. Neurology basically was a specialty that was invented at the University of Minnesota. It used to be part of psychiatry, and it was invented by Dr. A.B. Baker. And, you know, when you really start peeling back the onion as to a lot of the things that have gone on here, not only Medtronic and heart and whatever, but the entire life sciences at the University of Minnesota, I think you'd be challenged to find another institution that has had such a profound effect as the University of Minnesota Medical School over the years and the research there. So I would be a little bit prouder of it. Even though you are proud, I'd be a little bit prouder of what you've done lately, because people only tend to gravitate towards the one or two points when they think of the U, when there's really 1,000 points that you really could point to. Dr. Brunick.
Chair Nonis, Representative Abrams, you're absolutely right. It's very difficult in this state of Lake Wobegon to really brag about how good the University of Minnesota is. But it truly is, I think, the crown jewel in the state. That doesn't minimize to any degree the contributions other institutions of higher education make to our state. But this has been a center of innovation and activity, and that's why economists, in talking about the future of the global economy, stress over and over again the role and the power of research and research partnerships between a leading research university and the private and the nonprofit sector as being right in the center of activity and innovation. The economy of Minnesota is one of the top seven right now, close to the top seven in the United States, largely because it is an innovation-based economy. It's an economy that depends on its very existence for the creation of ideas, the creation of products, the creation of new strategies to do a whole range of things, from banking to medical care to the prevention of disease, to the development of new crops, and that's a lot of what we do. And there are only three places in the United States that have the breadth of the University of Minnesota, and we get constantly criticized for that. But let me remind there are only one or two places in the entire United States that could have competed for $25 million of agricultural research dollars and homeland security dollars that came recently to the University of Minnesota. Because we could combine veterinary medicine, agriculture, a world-class medical school, one of the best public health schools in the entire United States, a business school, and a range of other academic programs, the College of Biological Sciences, just to name a few. And it's by putting those new combinations together and putting them together in unique ways that I think allows us to be constantly in the business of renewing ourselves, renewing our connections to Minnesota's needs and economic future.
Representative Carlson, excuse me.
Anyway,
Representative Carlson.
I completely agree, and I will work on being less understated. I've actually been working on it lately.
Representative Carlson.
Now, Mr. Chairman, being we have a number of new members on this committee, 2 years ago when we were at Kauffman Union, you did step forward and address, I think, what Representative Abrams is asking you to, and I remember at the time I asked you for a copy of those points that you were making at that meeting, and maybe if you can still find those and dust those off, you could share that with the committee, because I agree, I think the more people understand about the outcome of the university in terms of what it means to the economic health of the state, and I would say the same thing about Minsky as well, they were here last week, but you did address a lot of the impact that research and so on was having on the state of Minnesota, and I think Representative Abrams might find that interesting, and I wouldn't mind revisiting that myself.
Dr. Brundick?
Thank you. The other point I would like to make is that while we are in this committee room talking about these issues, the rest of the world is quite busy. I just returned from China recently, had an opportunity to meet with the Minister of Education, leading academic leaders across China. And the country of China has decided that they are going to invest in their top 10 research universities in a very big way, and then also invest in 200 universities across the country. I saw a campus along with Regent Medicine that had been literally planned here and built in two for 22,000 students. It was the best designed campus I've ever visited in my entire life. And so while we're sitting here, other states, California with the recent $3 billion initiative, the state of New Jersey has close to a $400 million investment in the biosciences that they're rolling out. Wisconsin is talking about anything from $350 to $700 million. Michigan has a major investment. And I just want to remind all of us that people around the world understand the need to function and compete in a global economy. Doesn't mean that we tax our people to death, but it does mean that we make really sound and prudent investments. And I think we have the position now as a world leader, clearly as a national leader, and it's one of the reasons why places around the country are constantly trying to raise the very best people we have at the University of Minnesota, and we need to protect that kind of investment. The second part of our proposal deals with the whole issue of attracting and retaining talent for Minnesota's future. There's a part of this proposal that deals with some exciting ideas that we would like you to consider related to supporting students. The goal of this initiative is to attract and retain and educate as many of the most qualified students in Minnesota as possible. The Itasca Group is meeting now, and you all know about that. That initiative of CEOs and leaders, political as well as nonprofit leaders, to address the long-term needs of our region. And this one is right in the center of it. How do we keep the best talent in Minnesota? How do we attract the best talent in Minnesota? How do we nurture the talent we need, if you will, for the future? I thought it was interesting in the article in the Star Tribune today written by Mary Jane McConkle, when she talked about the Colorado Initiative and what was happening in Colorado, that one of the, I think it was David Longenecker, who was quoted in that article, talked about Colorado's abysmal participation rate in higher education. That is not a problem in this matter, although I think we've seen some decline in participation rate that I think we need to move in the other direction. But the participation rate in higher education in Minnesota is approximately double the rate you will find in other parts of the country, and it's particularly much higher with respect to Minnesota residents compared to the results you see in college-level attendance of Colorado residents.
We have another question, President Blunick. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, on the point of attracting students, I had an opportunity a while back to meet with representatives of the government of Taiwan. They made the point, they were talking about the United States generally, not the University of Minnesota in particular, but they said as the cost of higher education has increased in the United States, more and more of their students who study abroad are choosing places like New Zealand, Australia, and Canada because of the lower cost. And my question is, you referenced when you were going over the bonding request, attracting the best and the brightest worldwide. I guess best and brightest is my words, but that point that you were making. And again, you know, the ability to attract. How are we doing with attracting the best and the brightest, and is the cost factor with the tuition increases we've seen nationally and at the U in particular impacting on that ability?
Dr. Bruin.
Especially graduate students that would be here for their doctorate. And
Representative Norris, Representative Carlson, I chair a couple of national committees on some of these issues, and I could actually take the next hour and a half trying to respond to your question, because it is a challenging question. International students contribute about $15 billion to the U.S. economy on an annual basis, and there are basically three challenges that we have at the present time. They are also a big, big part of what has made this country very powerful and very strong, including the state of Minnesota. Just to get you to name one statistic, University of Minnesota has graduated 8,000 people from the country of China since 1915. We have 1,200 students and scholars from China here this year. We are probably the most productive university in the world in graduating people in China, and we have something like 25 major relationships with universities and the government of China at the present time. So it's a big part of who we are as a, not just a national, but an international university. There are three big challenges. One is 9/11. Since 9/11, and with the heightened security that all of us know is a concern to the citizens of this country, clearly, we have imposed some very stiff kind of requirements for gaining admission, getting visas to the United States, and it hasn't been a particularly efficient process, and nearly every, particularly four-year college and university, has seen some decline in international students. We haven't seen as many, we haven't seen as much of a reduction at the University of Minnesota, but it's between 15 and 20% over the high point of a couple of years ago. The second is cost. Cost is a factor. We don't have enough scholarship money, and many of the countries around the world don't have enough economic potential and, you know, to send people. Although, it's interesting, the Minister of China, when he met with us, said that by his estimate, they would have to outsource at least 35 to 40% of all of their higher education to other countries of the world over the next 15 to 20 years, because they believe that the only way they can really grow their economy and lower the dependency of their people is by investing in higher education. So they are going to put money into sending students to different places around the world. And the third thing that's happening is other countries are getting smart. I mean, we have the best higher education system in the world, and Minnesota has one of the best in the United States, I might add. And so international students have wanted to come here. This has been sort of the place to go. And other countries in the world are investing in their institutions of higher education or higher education systems, but they're also doing one other thing. They're actually in Beijing, the Australian government has a recruitment office to recruit Chinese students. We don't have anything like that. The United States doesn't have a recruitment office. We went to a recruitment fair in Beijing. We were one of two universities in the entire United States to show up at this fair. Most of the rest of them were from Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia, and New Zealand. Well, it's a long sort of answer to your question, but I think those are the three factors. Cost is one, but it's, I don't think it's an overriding factor yet. I think we need to straighten out the visa situation, and I think we've made a lot of progress with Secretary Ridge and the administration and the State Department in that area. We still have some distance to go, but I think we need to compete. We've been really used to people regarding the United States as the place to come and study, and now this is getting to be a very competitive international game.
Mr. Chairman, just a short follow-up.
Representative Carlson.
The folks I was talking to, as I mentioned, were from Taiwan. When you reference China, would your comments be true relative to the continued ability to attract students from Taiwan? Because they mentioned only the cost as the factor.
When you're in Taipei, you don't refer to Taipei as being part of China, obviously. Yeah. There's a certain general's warning against that public statement.
Although now they have international
right. They have very strong relationships and growing relationships, and the business people in Taiwan are really doing a lot of economic activity in part of China right now. So, yes. And the other thing I would say is that in some sectors, in some fields, in medicine and technology, fields like that, the percentage of students from other countries of the world at the graduate professional level of the university are very, very high. Our School of Public Health, for example, has students from all over the world. And we've got several this year from Latin America, from Africa, clearly from Asia. So that's a big part. In fact, if you go to places like 3M, Medtronic, and you look for University of Minnesota graduates, you will find a lot of University of Minnesota graduates with PhDs, let's say, in computer science, or perhaps degrees in other fields that have to do with human health. A big part of Minnesota's economy is fueled by people who have really come here and found this to be a great place to raise their families and to develop their own future. So it's a big issue. We have to keep our eye on this one. We cannot be sort of a fortress Minnesota in today's global world. We just simply can't be. So anyway, another part of this proposal is we're asking you to think about a new idea to create some challenge, give us a challenge grant that would allow us to go out and raise private money and really leverage the state investment in a highly creative way. We feel we need to make some investments in the funding and support of our graduate professional students. We've got a lot of other things that we think are important to improving support for students and to support their educational responsibilities or educational pursuits, I should say, at the universities. A second part of this proposal, and I want to take just a few moments to mention this. We talked about, in response, I believe, to Representative Carlson's question, the University of Florida study. And I mentioned that one of the worrisome parts of this study, at least from last year, was some slippage in faculty recognition and faculty awards. We have a problem. Our compensation of faculty is somewhere between 25th and 28 out of the top 30 research universities in the country. We're less disadvantaged with respect to the compensation levels of our coordinate campuses. In fact, we're probably kind of in the right areas. But this is a serious problem, and so we're putting on the table a modest request for what we call competitive compensation. And this would be allocated in a highly differential way to those areas of the University of Minnesota that are going to be under extraordinary pressure over the next several years. Last week, two of my colleagues left for Duke University. You saw Catherine Verfias going to Belgium primarily for personal reasons. But people are getting recruited increasingly, not just from the best universities in the country, but some of the best universities in the world. And so this is a modest amount of money to really look after what areas that we think represent extraordinary risks to the future of the University of Minnesota, and to address those salary compensation levels and to do so competitively before we start losing the very people who have made the university as strong as it is today. It also goes to the heart of recruiting people in fields that we think are critically important. The last section of this proposal deals with the core infrastructure of the University of Minnesota, what it takes to support research today. When I started as a professor in the late 1960s, if you were a new recruit to the medical school, the dean very generously probably provided you with about a $50,000 startup cost, right? Today, those startup costs to equip laboratories and help people get their careers launched might run in the neighborhood of $1 to $2 million. And funding these very important laboratories that incidentally are used not only by the university but also used by the private sector. And when people from the private sector come in and use a place like BioDev, they actually contribute back to the renewal of the laboratories and renewal of the equipment, the depreciation, if you will, of our investment. But this is all about providing the necessary tools and the necessary investment to keep the research enterprise of the University of Minnesota vibrant and strong for the future. So it's laboratories, it's equipment, it's startup costs for early stage work that you often need to do before you go out with a competitive proposal to the National Institutes of Health. It's improved research security post 9/11. The pressures to invest in security have just gone up astronomically at the University of Minnesota. And so anyway, this is all about keeping the capacity strong, making sure that we can keep it strong for the future, and keep the and it's all about keeping the university competitive on the national and world stage. Technology seems to me to be a boring subject to bring before you today, but it's all about supporting the critically important research, educational, and I would argue, outreach mission of the University of Minnesota. It's all about replacing an aging 35-year-old financial system that is no longer served by a vendor. It's all about high-performance networks of the kind, you know, Internet 2 networks that allow you to take computing power to Rochester for a very, very small cost and support the Mayo University partnership in biomedical research. It's about technology-enhanced classrooms, but more importantly, the kind of portal strategy that we are putting in place to support the University of Minnesota Extension Service and to support links between the work we do, the knowledge we create, and the knowledge we store, and the needs of businesses and communities throughout Minnesota. So technology and technology infrastructure is really important. With the kind of center of activity in this area, I ran across an interesting story the other day. Cambridge High School students were able to watch an open-heart surgery while it was being conducted in the university's medical school recently and interact with the lead surgeon while the surgery was taking place. And under the watchful eye, I assume, Senior Vice President Frank Sarah.
Every day.
But anyway, that just gives you a sense of how you can sort of open up the world to so many people in our state if you make these investments. Quickly, here are the numbers. Sort of sound like I'm giving the Wall Street Report at the end of the day. But this request, the state side, the 50% side from the state, asked for $42 million a year to really cover the investments that I discussed with you just a few moments ago. The university's part, $42 million a year, would be primarily by raising revenues. The largest revenue source would be tuition. Our estimate is that the tuition increase would go up roughly 5.5%, and we're pledging to reallocate the university cost and university investments $15 million a year, or a total of $45 million for the biennium, if you use biennial math, And I want to tell you, this is very, very heavy lifting after you've cut $100 million of state investment in just the past 2 years alone. I can give you more detailed breakdowns. I think they're in the budget proposal you have before you. Let me make just a couple of quick comments, and perhaps we'll have some other questions and comments from you. About 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to travel to Nashville, Tennessee, where our football team was playing in the Music City Bowl. And at that time, the University of Minnesota was playing the University of Arkansas. Usually before these bowl games, you have a dinner for people who are hosting you, and you're asked to say some kind words about your opposition before you go after them the next day on the gridiron. And the chancellor of the University of Arkansas managed to speak first, or he was asked to speak first. He said something that stuck with me to this very day, and actually touched me deeply. He said he was honored to play the University of Minnesota because institutions like his really aspired to be in the league of the University of Minnesota, to be like the University of Minnesota, to have the academic profile and reputation of the University of Minnesota. He argued we were the envy of public universities around the country. I fear without sufficient investment from the state, and over the long term from the state, the university faces the prospect of decline, and perhaps even rapid decline, with serious long-term consequences to Minnesota. We are not California. California has 10 research universities. We have one. We need to protect it and protect our future in the process. A failure to invest today means, in our judgment, taking a pass on opportunities that China, Illinois, Michigan, New Jersey, California, just to name a few, are taking and are making and investing in research in their institutions of higher education. I'm frankly quite distressed at where Minnesota stands today in terms of its investment in education generally, not just higher education, not just the University of Minnesota. In terms of total tax dollars going to higher education in terms of $1,000 of personal income, which economists regard to be a fairly decent measure. Arkansas, a state that envies Minnesota, is 14th in the nation, and we're 29th. Now, I recognize our capita income is higher, but if you gaze across the border toward Wisconsin, you will find that Wisconsin is ranked 18th. Rather than 29. There's been a lot of buzz about how Wisconsin spends less. That's not true. Wisconsin has $500 million of local property taxes that are not included in any of the statistical comparisons. This state has made very significant investments in education generally and in higher education particularly over the past 30 years. And I think we do have a great record of building strong institutions of higher education in this state, creating unparalleled access and opportunity for our citizens. And I think the economic results and the quality of life in Minnesota are a direct result of that attention people before us have paid to the state's future. I mentioned just a few moments ago that 2 years ago we received the largest budget reduction to any public campus along with MNSCU and the MNSCU system in the nation. Through sound fiscal practices and very hard work, and by raising prices very substantially, as I think many of you have just mentioned, we were able to minimize or at least blunt the effects of these reductions on the core academic programs of the University of Minnesota. That's not just my opinion. That's the opinion of a leading accounting firm that we brought in to take a look for our Board of Regents at how we had handled these issues in the past 2 years, and you probably saw the Star Tribune editorial that I didn't expect to come out of that discussion with the board. But these reductions and further cuts over time will erode the very foundation of the University of Minnesota by weakening our strength, and I would really emphasize this, our competitive position. The budget request we have before you is formulated on a true partnership between the state, its citizens, and the university. I believe we can't come before you with any credibility and just ask you for money. We have to do our part as well. We have to raise revenue We have to use what we have effectively, and we have to make some very difficult choices that we think are in our long-term future. So we're prepared to do our part in the middle of this difficult fiscal environment, but we can't do it alone. We need a partnership with you. This partnership will position the state of Minnesota, I think, in an increasingly global economy, a highly competitive economy that depends upon the creation of ideas and innovation for its very survival, in the education and development of talented people. It's all about human capital, and it's all about creating ideas. The goal of this partnership is to maintain and improve the quality and competitive position of the university, the state's only research university. It will advance critical academic investments that we think are areas of strength for us and areas of strength and competitive advantage for the state of Minnesota. We think it will help us attract and retain talent in the state of Minnesota. And we think it will improve the quality of education we provide students and the reach of our programs in relationship to the needs of Minnesota communities. So I'm asking you as elected officials, as people who live in this remarkably successful state, to sustain Minnesota's long-term success, Minnesota's long-term economy, Minnesota's long-term quality of life. I think the citizens of this state deserve nothing less than to have one of the best higher education systems in the United States and to have one of the best public research universities in the world. I want to leave you with this thought. We are committed to high aspirations. We're committed to doing our part. And I hope you'll give us the opportunity to create a great legacy of education and innovation for the future. So I'm very happy to take your questions and comments at this time.
Thank you for your presentation. We have Representative Pawlowski with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. President Brunix, I'm trying to get a handle on the wants and needs of higher education. So I'm looking at the page that has your numbers, the $42 million and the $42 million match. I would like to know, if you do not get $42 million in new money, how much of what we just saw will occur with either tuition or reallocation? Can you tell us that? If you get no new money from the state, what's a want and what's a need up there?
President Brunig.
Representative Narnas, Representative Pawlowski, we really struggle with this proposal. I'm not blowing smoke at you. You've got a tough situation. We still have a sluggish economy, receipts that are not coming in as fast as you would like, and at least at the present time, a commitment to no increase in revenue. So it's a really tough situation. I recognize that. So we came in with what we thought was a really responsible request. Now, what do? If you don't get all the money? There are basically just three things that I think we could do. One is we will have to defer some of the investment that we think is critical to make. Now, some of that investment is investment we have already deferred because of the last budget cut. And so we've got some things that we feel we really need to do to strengthen areas like pediatrics or some of the basic sciences at the university, areas of technology, many other fields that we think are really important. So we'll have to defer that. We'll have to put it on a slower cycle. We'll have to do less. And we'll have to take a longer period of time to get it done. The second thing is we are going to have to raise prices. Now, I hope we don't have to get close to what we did in the last 2 years. Regent Benson tells me that he actually ran on a low tuition platform when you appointed him to the Board of Regents, and he had the distinction over 7 years of voting 81% of, I think, is it 81%? Over 7 years, and it's 56 over 4, and it's 29 over 2. So we're not going to, I think, approach those stratospheric levels, but we will have to raise prices.
Mr. Chair.
And the third thing, because we're just going to have to cut more. And I think that's going to have, I think, a very negative impact on the state and the quality of the university.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, thank you, President Brunix. I want to pursue this just a little bit further with my next question. Let's assume you get no new money, and then the governor proposes that there is no, or there is a small percentage, for enrollment adjustment. What happens then? No new money, and you only get a percentage of enrollment adjustment. Now, can I assume that whatever you don't get in enrollment adjustment would be made up in tuition
at least a large part of it in tuition. You're using the term cost, and I know cost to you would be not just tuition, but it would be cuts and reallocation.
Yeah.
Can I assume that?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Then I have one more question.
Representative Pulaski.
Well,
that's the only way we could have adjusted. It's the only way we succeeded in adjusting the budget. We have to have a balanced budget. And the one thing that came out in the external, the Deloitte 2 auditor's review of the university, is we didn't engage in any gimmicks. I promised the board within a couple of months of being appointed, and after saying I could have picked a better time, my timing was not particularly good in accepting this position. I promised them that we would not balance the budget by pushing off the responsibilities to the future. I didn't want somebody 4 or 5 years from now to be facing just an awful situation because we had not done our work and used a lot of one-time money to solve the problem. So we buckled down. We reformed our health care system. We took a wage and a salary increase. We pushed tuition 29%. We cut deeply. We cut 550 jobs at the University of Minnesota. We cut centers. We cut programs. We restructured the University of Minnesota Extension Service. And Representative Erdahl followed that very, very closely and knows how tough that was. And it's still an ongoing process at the University of Minnesota. So if we don't get the kind of funding we need, it's raising revenues, and mostly that's going to be raising prices on students. And in some areas of the university, I've got to tell you, we are at a crisis point when it comes to tuition. What is the in-state tuition for the medical school this year again?
Almost $28,000.
Almost $28,000 in out-of-state.
$1.5 million. Yeah, around $40 million.
Now, we have in the next 5 to 10 years, 50% of the vets, the pharmacists, the advanced healthcare nurses, the docs in this state are going to retire. That's our best estimate. I mean, demography is destiny, and some of our demographers know how to count. And, you know, we can't afford a situation where we put our whole healthcare system at risk because of our failure to invest at the present time. But those are the tools you have. And some of the cuts can be really ugly, as you know.
Mr. Chair, I have one more question. Given the answers to my first two questions, and I'm taking a look at the 5.5% tuition just if you get the state match. I'm easily now hitting toward double digits if the scenario I just laid out occurs. I would like to know where a four-year university at Rochester is in the plans for the University of Minnesota, and what was the governor referring to when he said a four-year university? Could you help explain that to this committee? Because I didn't see it in your budget presentation.
President Bruner.
Chair Norris, Representative Pulaski, for some reason when I came here today, I expected this question, and I expected it from you. I mean that most effectively. Let me just say a couple of things. I didn't know the governor was going to make this announcement, so you heard it for the first time, so did I. And I do not know what the governor has in mind, other than what I managed to hear on my way out the door to another commitment and what I managed to read in his address. So I think we'll have to wait to see what this looks like. I thought I was pretty strong in response to some questions last week. If you're talking about a traditional four-year campus, when I was asked the question, budget people got all over me because I was giving back of the envelope sort of intuitive responses to the question. And I said it'll probably cost anywhere from $25 to $50 million a year in operating costs based on my knowledge of the MinSU system and the University of Minnesota system, and probably $300 to $400 million of capital costs. Fitz went out and actually found some examples of new campuses opening up in California, and those numbers are right on the mark. They really are. There is not a prayer that we can capitalize the expansion of higher education in Rochester from the University of Minnesota's budget. It is not in this budget. It will not be committed in this budget. It can't be done. The $15 million of reallocation back-to-back in this budget is going to deal with the effects, the long-term effects of the $100 million a year cut we took before, and the ongoing investment needs of the University of Minnesota. So if we're going to have any kind of different configuration in Rochester, I think we're going to have to figure out how to fund it, how to pay for it, how to develop it. Now, having said that, I understand the concerns of citizens in Rochester. The citizens in Rochester, like the citizens in the Twin Cities, the citizens in Duluth, believe that higher education is a critical ingredient in their future. How we do it, how we work together to accomplish that result is something that I think we have to continue to address. But I understand their aspirations, I understand their concerns, but there isn't a prayer that we can do, we can create something that by simply internally reallocating resources. Let me say one other thing. I believe the people that I know and talk to occasionally in Rochester believe that what they need in their community is not just educational programs, it's also the kind of thing we're trying to do with the Mayo University Partnership, the kind of thing we're trying to do by building a tech, sort of a tech transfer office down there to help work with local businesses. They really need a connection with the research strengths of the University of Minnesota. It's all related to the kind of technology and the kinds of economy, the types of the businesses they have in their region. So if we're to create something new by reallocating from inside the core, we will make the University of Minnesota anorexic, basically. It won't even accomplish what the community of Rochester needs, because they need this strong, they need educational programs to deal with their workforce issues, but they also need this strong connection to the research programs of the University of Minnesota, and they're mostly lodged here on the Twin Cities campus. So it's a difficult situation. I'm personally not going to oppose any effort to improve the planning and delivery of services down there. We'll be a partner with NSCU and others in any kind of process that unfolds. But I just have to say quite unequivocally, there's nothing in this budget that can make that happen.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, just one observation. Thank you, President Brunix. You said you did not know what the governor was going to, or that he was going to announce a new university or a four-year university. It's interesting because I had a conversation with Chancellor McCormick right after the speech, and his statement to me was, Representative Pawlowski, what the expletive deleted was this all about? And obviously he was not informed. I think he used a softer word, but it was pretty much that phrase. So I'm wondering who was consulted in this proposal. And you said you didn't know, so it's a rhetorical question. I'll save it for the governor's budget.
Yeah,
President Bruning.
Representative Norris, Representative I really, I don't know. I do know for more than 30 years that I've been connected to Rochester that the people in that community have argued strongly and passionately for the expansion and the role in expansion of higher education. It's a community that really values higher education and the importance of higher education, but figuring out the solution is not always easy, particularly in 2005 in the midst of the kinds of challenges we face. But we're going to stay committed to providing higher education services in Minnesota and to Rochester. We're going to stay with our commitment to do the very best we can do. We'll work with any kind of framework that comes out of the governor's recommendation. If it passes by the legislature and gets signed by him, we'll be a good partner. But I was not consulted on this, and I don't have a clue as to how we'd actually get this done. But there may be solutions that people might have, and we'll just have to see what happens.
Representative Erdo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Brunix, in your opinion, do we already have a surplus in universities, public universities and colleges in Minnesota?
Representative Nornis, Representative Erdahl, that is the big heartburn question. The University of Minnesota is the only upper Midwest university system that is ever close to campus. If you take all the upper Midwest states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, you name them all, Nebraska, the Dakotas, we're the only one that has ever had to face that challenge. It is very, very painful to put boards over the windows and close the doors of the campus and the local community. It's very, very difficult. And so it's a hard question. If I will give you, I've been known to stick my neck out of time to a few things. I'll give you my take on this. If the state is going to lessen its investment to institutions and to systems, which is something I've heard about with the Colorado Initiative and so forth. I think it's a very risky game with respect to Minnesota's future, and I don't see any alternative but to close some things. I just plain don't see how we can stretch the money. The only alternative is to basically erode the quality of what we have. We have some very fine institutions in this state, and it, to me, to risk our competitiveness as a state, I hope is not going to be the case. But I would argue that we probably are overbuilt if we can't grow the money supply to support the long-term needs of higher education. But how you sort that out and how you deal with it is very, very challenging. The United States military wasn't particularly successful when it came to closing bases, and they had to create some extraordinary process to get it done. It's very painful because the arguments that I use today to support the interests of the University of Minnesota are the same arguments I would use in Winona, that I would use in St. Cloud, that I would use in Cookston and Morris, and Mankato and Moorhead, and places where we have very thriving two-year colleges. But I've got to tell you that, in my judgment, you can only do so much by reorganizing administrative operations. And I think what Chancellor McCormick and his colleagues have done to create single executive for five small campuses is a very, very good, I'll just say from my judgment, it's a very good cost reduction move. It's a very good economic move. But you do that once, you can't do it twice, three times, and four times. You can't have a span of control of 30 campuses, for example. I think that's just something that is not doable. So we may have to face some very difficult decisions if these trend lines continue. And they will not be particularly easy for any of us.
Dr. Brunix, Representative Carlson.
No, Mr. Chairman, my initial question wasn't dealing with Rochester, but I'll make a comment and you can respond, but I think I know what your answer is going to be. And having been on this committee for many years and have dealt with Rochester's needs on several different occasions, the question I have to pose is, what do they want or need that they don't already have with current partnerships? And, historically, they argued, and I was a part of this committee, that they needed a upper division programs, and so we created the 2+2 program where Winona came in as a partnership to provide upper division. A few years ago, the question of graduate programs and engineering in particular came up, and we responded, just to give you two examples, with a special for the University of Minnesota to start an engineering program. And Jim Infante, Dr. Infante, worked very extensively in getting that started as the head of IT at the time, did just what we thought was a great job in getting things going in that regard. So it goes back to, what is the issue, what is it that they want or need that they don't have? And I guess I'm willing to hear what the answer to that question is, but I think it's important maybe for other committee members that might not have followed that issue to know that we have, both Minsky and the university and the legislature, responded in a variety of ways over the years to try to meet those. My question, unless you want to comment on that, goes to the tuition question. And a couple of years ago, you and I had a discussion in committee about tuition, and we talked a little bit about the way you increase tuition revenues twofold. One is an increase on current students, if you will, and the other is through growth by attracting more students. And I do know that in the last biennium, both Minsky and the university
accommodate them in spaces. So there could be some increased revenues with part-time students. I mean, that fluctuates depending on the programs you offer and so forth. But mostly it would be on current students. I don't see much enrollment growth ahead of us. We could take a few hundred students in Crookston and Morris. The loop is at absolute capacity. the campus was built for about 8,500 to 9,000 students. They have 10,500 enrolled this year. I caution the chancellor there not to admit any more. I think they're going to trend downwards slightly this year.
He answered my follow-up with the last couple of sentences there about the Hull State campus. Thank you.
We have a little capacity there, but not a lot.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Brunings, and I apologize for missing the first part of this. I have a conflicting committee that meets at this time, and I can't figure out how to be in two places at one time.
Well, you figure that out.
I'll let you know. I'm sure it'll come in handy for you. You and I have the privilege during the course of the year to work on issues related to underserved students and the growing diversity of students in our K-12 system. And so I'm just wondering if you can share with the committee, given your recognition of the big demographic shifts that are happening in our society, what the University of Minnesota's vision is in terms of being able to be a place that can be successful in both recruiting and retaining an increasingly diverse student body, and obviously also to share any kind of challenges you think that might pose, given that for the most part many of the students are probably lower income than past historical trends. And then also if you can maybe comment a little bit about, I'm curious about the foreign student issue. It's my understanding that we've seen a drop in foreign student enrollments across the country. And I can't help but think that, and that's due to national and international policies, and I can't help but think that that might have some negative implications in terms of revenues for the University of Minnesota. So it's basically those two questions.
Dr. Brunick.
Representative Norris, Representative Mariani. Let me just take the last question. We can talk a little bit about, just before you got here, about some of the challenges with respect to recruiting international students. It is a challenge. Post 9/11 requirements, security requirements, have made it more difficult for students to get visas. They have to meet more stringent tests right now. And other countries around the world are taking advantage of that by really recruiting very, very aggressively. So we are, organizations of higher institutions of higher education. Senator Coleman are from Minnesota, and many others are really starting to go after these issues and are introducing bills and I think strategies to make it easier. One of the real challenges, obviously, is financial support. It's hard enough to support the domestic students from the state of Minnesota. It is very difficult to find a scholarship and other forms of support for international students unless they are graduate professional students, and then often they get graduate assistantships and support in that fashion. But it is a continuing concern, one that is very important to the university. About a third of our students on the Twin Cities campus, the largest campus, come from outside of the state of Minnesota, and many of them from different parts of the world. The other question you raised is, I think, a very challenging one for this state. I was really pleased with the strength of the Citizens League report in this area, where they talked about the need to address long-term preparation issues in K-12 education and to address the challenge of making the transition from K-12 to higher education much more seamless than it is today. And I think that's a good thing for us to get our hands around, because I think Minnesota, with its range of public and private institutions of higher education, can be a real partner with the K-12 community in addressing these issues. So one of the things you can count on from the University of Minnesota, from our Board of Regents, is a strong commitment to address issues of preparation of students, to really find ways to make the transition much more seamless than it is. I think there are some enormous opportunities to address these issues with the two-year college system in Minnesota, and some great creative options that I've chatted with the leaders in that system and with Chancellor McCormick about recently. The University of Minnesota is going to be committed to serve first-generation students, low-income students, students of color in the future. We want a diverse community. We want the University of Minnesota to mirror the characteristics and culture of our state, because we think that's good for the health of our state, the vitality of our state. And one of the best ways to create opportunity for people. And we are really deeply committed to the issues of keeping higher education accessible and affordable. And let me just say a couple of things about it. The average student at the University of Minnesota leaves with about $16,000, when they graduate, with about $16,000 of debt. I don't see that as a huge problem. It'll surprise you to hear that, but I don't think of it as an enormous problem. It's about the same level of debt I had when I left in 1964 and finished my baccalaureate degree. The problem is, if that young man or woman wants to do something else, like go to Cranks Medical School, or go to But anyway, if you want to go on to medical school or law school, or you want to go to graduate school, then if you have to borrow money, you could come out of medical school with $125,000 worth of debt, or $130,000, $140,000 if you come out of dental school. And then you've got the daunting challenge of paying back $150,000 and starting your practice. And what we are beginning to see, and Judge Haney from Duluth made this very, very clear in a recent set of comments he made about the law school clerks in his office. They all, he said, had an average debt load when they finished law school of $50,000 to $60,000. He said they're not choosing to go into public service. They don't have the same choice that I had when I was a young man, along with other people in the state. So anyway, I think that's the big risk long term. I mean, if you say to a young person whose lifetime earnings will go up $1 million to $1.5 million compared to a high school graduate, that they have $16,000 to pay off in educational debt, this is the same young person that's going to go out and get a car loan for 20 to 25. I don't think that's a bad investment to make in your future. So I think one of the strengths of the American higher education system is that we do have a tuition system, and it is priced more to sort of an individual benefit that people get. But what we have to keep our eye on is these curves. We can't have these costs keep going up at exponential rates, because then we will increasingly price higher education out of the marketplace. 250,000 young people left public institutions of higher education last year and stated as the primary reason for leaving the lack of financial support. 250,000 young people. That's just incredible. And we can't allow that to happen. So I think it's the future I'm more worried about than even what we've been through here. One final comment. So we're committed to diversity, opportunity. We want students to access the University of Minnesota. And I think we achieve pretty darn good results. The percentage of students of color is about 8 to 10% of the state, about 18% of the University of Minnesota enrollments are people who are students of color. So I think we really take that very, very seriously. The other thing we're doing is we appropriate our own money through very tough reallocation of private fundraising to cushion the impact of these rising tuition rates on lower income students. And so in the last 4 to 5 years, the Board of Regents has passed budgets that have essentially neutralized or substantially neutralized these extraordinary cuts on the lowest income students. When I use the term low income, the average family income is about $26,000, but if you use the federal requirement of $40,000 or below in adjusted family income. And we have, over a five-year period, appropriated $12.5 million to address these issues on the university's campus. And it's one of the reasons we have not seen the same kind of exodus of lower-income students that I think we've seen other parts of the country. It was a proposal of President Udoff's and mine when I served as his provost, and we think it was a sound policy, and we're going to continue it. And we're going to continue some other ideas. We're going to advance some other ideas that we think are really important. I really encourage you to think about one part of our proposal. I encourage you to think about the whole thing and just pass it this afternoon so we don't have to spend a lot of time talking about the rest of the session.
So moved.
I do believe we need to work more creatively to engage people in the private sector. People people who have graduated, I can't tell you how many people look me in the eye and say, you know what tuition was at the University of Minnesota when I attended in the 40s and 50s or in the 80s? In the 80s, when somebody attended the University of Minnesota and graduated, they could work 24 hours a week and pay tuition apiece. Today, it's more than 60 hours a week. So people will say that to me, and I look them in the eye and say, it's time to give back. Time to make a commitment and investment in young people for the future. And so one of the things I think we should use some of our public money to leverage and incent private gifts, private contributions, partnerships with the private sector. We have started something called the Promise for Tomorrow Scholarship Initiative, and we're pledging to match on a dollar-for-dollar payout basis any private gift we get for scholarships and fellowships. And people love that. They love to leverage their money. They love to give if they feel you're also giving at the same time and you're joining with them to create something much greater. So, I think we've got to get our hands around these issues. And I would also argue we've got to do a much better job of reaching out to the K-12 community, working with teachers, working with the K-12 community to get better results, get kids better prepared for college. We can't just hammer the K-12 community. They've got some very, very challenging issues on their hands. And talking to a group of superintendents recently, every one of them purported class size increases of about 10, particularly at the high school level. I don't know what it's like in Winona, but that's the way it seems to be in the metropolitan area.
We've run out of desks.
I think it's a reflection of what we're talking about. And one of the things we're noticing is that the students that come to us are better prepared today than ever before in our history. And I keep saying to Wayne Sigler, this can't be true. This can't be better. This can't be a better class than the last one. And every year it's true. He told me again this past week that it was true once again. And yet the kids don't write as well as they used to. I met with some faculty last week, and they complained about the lack of writing skill among their students. So we've made writing as a requirement for admission to the University of Minnesota, a writing test, a writing sample. We hope that will help our colleagues in the K-12 system to make that a priority. But how do you ask a teacher with 50 kids to read three or four times as many papers? So I think we've got to come to grips with some of these issues. And in my judgment, we all have an obligation to talk about the public good. And not just the individual good of our own institutions.
We have time for maybe one more question. Before we get to the question, though, I just want to point out to members that there are two handouts. One is from a Brian Fisher from the University of Minnesota Morris, and another is from a Dan Miller from representing graduate students at the U. Read those when you get a chance, and I think that basically support the testimony today. So.
Our students are just stellar, We put a lot of burden on them, but I'm really pleased with the way they responded.
And Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Brunix, on your partnership proposal, I was just wondering if the state investment were less than $42 million, say we're $22 million, would the university's investment be $22 million or something else?
President Brunix.
Chair Narnes, Representative Erdahl, the university's investment would obviously be less, and we couldn't, for example, produce $84 million a year if the state wasn't the strongest partner. But we clearly would stretch. I can't recall if it was Representative Carlson, or maybe you mentioned Representative Kowalski, the enrollment adjustment. And some of that can we've talked with finance, some of that can address the education and student support needs of this budget, particularly on a one-time basis. So we'd be back 2 years from now to harden those numbers. But there isn't a lot of support and a lot of help in the enrollment adjustment because most of ours is one-time money. We have $15 million of full allocation came to us on a recurring basis and about 42 on a non-recurring basis. So we have to be careful. We can't spend money. We can't make promises in our future unless we're able to capture these. But we clearly would have to defer, delay, some of these investments, but I believe the Board of Regents is rock solid in its commitment to maintain the quality of the University of Minnesota and all that we do throughout the state. And we would really stretch very, very hard to keep the university going forward. Last year, the last 2 years, with these devastating cuts, we still made investments. We just thought we had to. We just took some real hard hits in some areas so that we could keep the academic quality of the university going forward. But we're kind of against the, I think, I was told that the economy would take care of this. Take care of all of us by more than one person during this period of time. And I hope that's true sometime in the future. But I do not think this is a glide path for a better Minnesota. And I've got to tell you that we need to make some investments in education at all levels if we're going to maintain the quality of this state and the quality of life that we enjoy. And I shudder to think about 4 years, just continual erosion of our capacity. I just think we would be in a much weaker position 4 years from now. But we're going to do everything we can. The ideas that are in this budget, we are absolutely committed to. There's nothing in this budget that we think is superfluous. And we're going to really try our level best to keep the university going forward in these areas and these directions. But it'd be really tough without strong state participation. Let me just say one other thing. There are some people that believe that the University of Minnesota, for example, can just somehow compete and solve its budget problems on its own. The University of Colorado would be an absolute disaster if 45% of the students didn't come from out of state and pay a whopping out-of-state tuition that's probably $25,000 to $30,000 a year. It looks like a public Ivy profile. Think about that for a moment. You want to get in the brain export business? You should probably organize a corporation. We can easily do it. We can send our best, most talented people someplace else. That's a disastrous course to take if you want to be a player in the national and world economy. Just simply can't do it. And the reason why we have an average of $2 more an hour in the state than the rest of the nation is because our people are better educated, they're better prepared to work in a complex economic environment that we find ourselves in. I just think we have been on the right path, and I hope we find some way, even in the midst of all the challenges we face, to make some prudent investments to keep us moving forward. We can't just muddle through. The stakes are too high. But anyway, thank you for giving me the chance, especially the chance to editorialize. I don't get much chance to do that back home.
We want to thank you, Dr. Brunix, for your presentation. It was an excellent one. I think the committee is, at least most of us, are optimistic that we can do something good for the university. One other thing that was in the I believe it came with your packet.
I think it came from
It shows district by district how the university connects with your home area, and I find that very interesting. So thank you very much.
I think that's the student profile?
Yes, it is.
The number of graduates and the number of students?
Yes.
We also can produce that kind of profile for your region in terms of the amount of investment that comes from the university to the economy of your region and a few other indicators that we think are pretty interesting.
I want to thank everyone else that came to the meeting, including the Board of Regents, the members. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.